Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of Playmakers. I'm Justin Marshall, and I'm very privileged this week to be speaking with a legend of New Zealand rugby and Doug Howlett. Thanks for joining us, Dougie. Good to see you. How's life, mate?
Yeah, delighted to be here, Marshy. And look, great to be back in New Zealand. I was away for a wee while, but we're 2 years back in New Zealand, and I must say, loving it at that.
So, look, mate, you had an absolutely outstanding career. Well, I'll start with that because you're still the leading try scorer for the All Blacks, which is something to be very proud of. You know, 49 tries in 69 tests. But for you, I guess, like everybody else, it started somewhere, didn't it? So what are your sort of early childhood memories from when you sort of first started playing rugby or any sport?
Yeah, look, like most New Zealand players, I guess, or New Zealand rugby players or New Zealand kids, you know, memories I have barefoot on frosty grounds, you know, playing rugby at my local park. And at the time it was rugby or rugby league. I played a lot of rugby league in our family. I had an older brother that progressed through the ranks and played professionally. And, you know, I was the younger brother that just sort of, you know, tagged along with him.
Please don't tell me you actually ended up in the forwards somewhere, did you? Were you always a back? You always played in the back line?
Yeah, I was always in the backs, and I think it started then when I was a younger player in older boys' teams. Yeah. And thankfully, I was fast.
You actually were a sprinter, weren't you? And correct me if I'm wrong, you actually did run a 10.48 at one stage?
Yeah, look, it's grown legs, so I think I got the 10.69 would have been my very best just sort of coming out of school.
Yeah.
And look, for a rugby player, that was really fast.
Yeah.
But back then, you know, obviously the game's advanced and guys are getting faster, but look, at that time, that got me out of a lot of trouble.
Was that ever an opportunity for you, a career pathway to continue with your sprinting and kind of make that your chosen sport? Well, do you think you're good enough?
Well, athletics was my summer sport, and then I'd cross over into rugby. Probably not quick enough in a 100-metre race to go much further, but, you know, I did a lot. I did hurdles, I did high jump, I did shot put. So potentially as a decathlete, it would have been a pathway forward if I were to go that way. And to be honest, you know, I loved having, you know, an individual sport during the summer and then my team sport in the winter. And when it came to decision time, you know, I just loved the camaraderie and the team environment. And that's why I leant more towards rugby.
Because you made the Auckland MPC team at 18 years old. So that must have been quite a leap, going from playing for Auckland Grammar, being in schools rugby, even representing New Zealand, but bang, all of a sudden you're in this amazing Auckland environment with, you know, what was it like walking into that changing room for the first time as a 18-year-old?
Yeah, you can imagine it was pretty nervy, and you hear all the stories about not putting your bag here or there or anywhere. Yeah. So I think for the first half hour, I just stood in the changing room just waiting for everyone to sit down so I could find a clear space.
Yeah.
But I think it was Graham Henry who selected me in that group. Mm. And again, some real old heads that made me feel really welcome. You know, probably more by actions, you know, a Fitzy and a Zinni, you know, and then probably closer to where I was in the back line, and a Ronnie Clark, you know, Lee Stensness, these types of players who, you know, were experienced guys and, you know, probably had a different way of approaching, you know, new players coming into an environment. And that was that arm around piece where, look, that was good, but have you thought about this? And just challenge me in different ways as opposed to being, you know, quite direct. And that just grew my own game and my understanding of the team.
You're in that Auckland environment, but your progression in terms of Super Rugby, firstly, you went to the Highlanders.
Yeah, and as you know, at that time there was a draft system for regions who could protect, you know, I think their best 22 players, and then if you're outside of the 22 players, other regions could pick you.
Yes.
So you know, at the time they had a couple of handy wingers at the Blues and Joely Vendere and Jonah Lomu, and a spare one there and Brian Lima.
Okay. You know? Right.
So there was no room at the time for my skills. So. Yep. Thankfully, I was picked up firstly by the Highlanders and then later on by the Hurricanes.
I think if you ask anybody, and I was fortunate enough to play with you, Dougie, you were always a really gifted athlete. Like you said, you had a strength, which was speed. But you also had a big engine, didn't you? You were incredibly fit. In my mind, that's what enabled you to do the things in the game that you did, that you got yourself around the field, got yourself into the positions to be able to score tries because you had a great work ethic. Was that something that was always there, or you trained it?
Yeah, it was trained. You know, I guess, firstly, coming into my first All Black team in 2000, you know, it was quite clear there were, you know, three wingers, Jeff Wilson, Jonah and Tana. You know, were the three wingers and myself.
Yeah.
And then there was Christian Cullen.
Yes.
You know, that was our backfield. And, you know, I sort of come into that environment and start, you know, sitting around a table like this and look around and go, wow, what am I doing here? You know, but I guess, you know, as things developed, you know, I had a different set of skills. Mm. You know, I was never going to be, you know, the Jonah that could run through a team. Mm. Goldie had his own set of skills. He could do, you know, things that others couldn't. Tana with his offloads and stepping. So my point of difference was speed and being in the right position at the right time, reading the game. And, you know, that was something that I was quite conscious of. And a lot of that wasn't, you know, skill-based. You know, it was sort of video work, looking at opposition, analysing, you know, my own teammates. You know, so, you know, who's more likely to make the break and look for offloads?
Yeah.
And these were the things that I was always looking for and, you know, conscious of following them quite closely when they had the ball.
Well, obviously, you have to do more than just be fast, don't you? You have to develop the skills and the vision to be able to see the game in a different way, and also kick, which probably wasn't something that you really wanted to do, but it's necessity for a fullback. I think a lot of people, when they comment about you, is you trained yourself to be a very accurate kicker so you could play fullback as well. Was that your preferred position? Or?
Yeah, no, I was an out-and-out wing, right wing at that.
Yep.
And look, as things developed, you know, the game developed and I had to develop as well. Mm. And that started way back when I was drafted into the Highlanders. You know, I was surrounded by, I think, Simon Culhane and, you know, Tony Brown was down there and Jeff Wilson. You know, these guys, you know, they could land a kick on a 20-cent piece from, you know, 50 metres away, you know. So I was in that environment. I go, whoa, you know, this is something I need to do because I was missing by, you know, almost 20 metres when they were landing on that 20-cent piece. So, look, I was always a student and wanted to learn about the game, and that continuous improvement piece was something that I was quite conscious of. And, you know, there was a lot of room, you know, for me to improve there.
Yeah.
But my first instinct was to run the ball, you know, run the ball. And that worked maybe for the first year or two.
Mm.
But what happens, you know, people work you out. You know, Doug's not going to kick it. You know, let's put it down his throat and bring up a good wall and we'll turn him over.
Yeah.
You know, and that was quite apparent in a couple of games that I played in.
Yeah.
So, look, I was luckily had good people around me that helped me, you know, improve my game in that space.
Little known fact, everybody, Doug Howlett played for the Hurricanes, didn't you?
Yeah, I had a full season with the Hurricanes.
A full season, yeah. I know. Look, I literally cannot remember that. But there's footage out there of you running around in a Hurricanes jersey. What was that like? Because they had a pretty happening back line at the time as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They were setting the pace, and I think that was where, you know, a lot of that run first instinct came from.
Yeah.
You know, again, Tana was a big part of that team at Lama Ramia. You know, Christian Cullen, you know, had a lot to do with shaping, you know, how I played, you know, as a young player. There's a winger there, Alex Talia, who offered something different again. So, you know, again, I was in that environment, and I look back at it now, and each franchise I went to, you know, I took away something different.
Sure.
And whether I would have got that, you know, staying in Auckland, I don't know. But, look, I made every post a winner and learned from all of those guys and all of those teams. And certainly it was an enjoyable, you know, a year to be with the Hurricanes. You know, all thrill, you know, there was a lot of movement of the ball, lots of tries.
Yeah, experienced that myself, actually.
Yeah, well,
I was on the receiving end of that team a few times.
Super team to be a part of and, you know, learnt a lot.
Yeah, so obviously you bounced around those teams, but as you say, and it's very evident when you talk, that you developed more skills and real balance in your game, which got recognised by the All Blacks up to the point that you got selected and made your test debut for the All Blacks in 2000. What was it like?
Yeah, well, wonderful memories. And if I just take one step back, you know, although I did develop all my skills, you know, touring around the franchises, I also developed as a person, you know, how to act, how to how to be a part of different teams. You know, it wasn't just about me and being fast. You know, you had to be a part of a team and buy into a culture and something bigger than yourself and all these types of things. So that was really valuable. In particular, you know, I was still a young man. You know, I was 18, you know, 19 at the time.
Yep.
So still, you know, again, coming to grips with what it was, what it was like being a young professional. And then I was into the All Blacks.
Yeah, and everybody has their story, their memory of, you know, pulling on the jersey for the first time. What was yours?
Yeah, funny enough, my first time pulling the All Black jersey on was against Tonga. At Albany Stadium.
Yeah, I remember that.
So, I had a very proud mum, obviously, doing the haka, singing the anthem. There was so much that goes on before the kickoff.
Yeah.
And even more so to that point, I was a reserve on the day. So I'd sung the anthem, done the haka, watched the first half. You know, I was almost exhausted. And then and then I got my chance to come on, and I actually came on for Christian at fullback in that game. So, managing energy leading into, you know, what you're there for was a lesson learned.
It's a pretty good All Black team to walk into, though. Obviously, we had that very entertaining game in 2000 over in Sydney, which they sort of deemed the game of the century or whatever. But again, you know, you still had to keep your head down and work hard to find your feet in that side, didn't you? Because it was pretty talented.
I absolutely was. And you know, I remember watching that game from the sideline, you know, because, you know, it was, I think it was Jonah and Jeff at the time, or Jonah and Tana, I'm not sure. But, exceptionally talented side. And again, I was just wide-eyed kid coming into the environment, learning as much as I could, just waiting for my chance, I think. It was what I was thinking in my head. Look, my time's going to come. I need to be ready for when that happens. So, I was really conscious of that.
2000 to 2008, look, your stats are unreal, mate. They really are. Like I said, the 49 tries, which is still a record. And in that period, 69 test matches, and you went through a pretty good era in New Zealand rugby, didn't you, really? Yes, there was those World Cup hiccups, but in general, a very successful time in the black jersey. Anything in your mind that sticks out as a favourite game or some favourite moments?
Oh, some wonderful, wonderful moments. And look, it's only now I'm starting to reflect a small bit more now that I have my own children.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
They were asking me questions about my career as an All Black.
Yeah.
And look, I look back really fondly with great memories with all the past players. The teams, the places we went, the hakas, and I don't have to go too much past my first game for New Zealand against Tonga in Albany Stadium.
Yep.
Some of the tours to South Africa, Australia, Europe. But I guess the one game that sticks out in my head was, I forget what year it was now, but it was against South Africa and Rustenburg.
Of all places.
So, yeah, you might have to look that one up. But, we spent, you know, a few days in Sun City prior to this test match. And Sun City is a lovely resort, you know, by a game park there, and we were preparing for this match. And they moved it to, it was kind of in the country, in the bush, in this place called Rustenburg. And we were all sunned, all relaxed, and we prepared well, but we were just driving our bus, and it was a bit of a bus journey into Rustenburg where we were playing, but it was in the middle of nowhere, and you sort of heard the music, you know, you heard the bass, you know, on the bus when we were getting there before you saw anything.
Yeah.
And as you slowly got closer, you know, the people walking alongside the bus, tapping the bus, rocking the bus, we knew, look, this is a hostile environment, and pretty quickly we had to snap out of that holiday. And not that we were in it, but we were sort of preparing to go into Loftus or something, you know, one of the grand stadiums. But this Rustenburg was something that sticks out in my head because it was really hostile.
Yep.
It was a really tough game. I distinctly remember, I think at halftime we come in and Richie McCaw had to get his face gun stapled, you know?
The old
gun staple. I hadn't seen anything like that before.
That's on the movies,
and
stuff.
It was sort of just gun stapled, his cut closed. And, it was just one of those type games that, you know, belonged in a Rocky movie. Because, you know, your body's coming on and off, and it was a really tight game. And just at the end of it, I think they got away on us. But, it's just one of those things when you ask me about a game that sticks out.
Yeah.
That's probably one, you know, because of the environment and obviously because of the result.
Again, you were still quite young when you decided that you wanted to move on from New Zealand rugby. 30?
29. Yeah, 29.
Well, there you go, yeah. What instigated that move?
Yeah, well, I guess that was two World Cup cycles for me.
Yep.
And, you know, if I were to stay on, you know, I'd be looking at hopefully trying to get through to another World Cup. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I'd grown this interest in world rugby, yeah. You know, and for so much of my career, it was all New Zealand, you know, everything that was going on, Super Rugby, Provincial Rugby, I hadn't really looked anywhere else. But those last few years, in particular during the World Cups, getting friendly with you know, some of the international players, the European Cup was of real interest.
Yes.
You know, they'd often say that was the best competition in the world.
Of course they do. Yeah.
And I just wanted to experience it, I guess, while I was playing good rugby, while I was in good form. I wanted to go up and really test myself and, you know, I guess, you know, see if I had it, you know, in a Northern Hemisphere competition.
So you did develop, like you say, some friendships through playing, you know, those countries from that part of the world. You mentioned some great wingers in our game and fullbacks, and quite a lot of those, like the likes of Jonah and mm-hmm. Christian Cullen, players like that, never got to play against the British and Irish Lions, but you did. That must have been, first of all, an incredible period and cycle to go through to play them, but was it also a time where you were starting to look at and having conversations about that part of the world as well?
Yeah, and that probably would have been the start of my thinking, you know, with, yeah. It was 2005, I believe, when the Lions came to New Zealand. Yep. And I remember, I just hadn't seen anything like that, you know, not being able to get a camper van up and down the country, no hotels. And I guess that following and what it meant, you know, for those supporters and Europe in general, I had no real understanding. And as we said earlier, it was another a big test match, but it was another test match, and yeah. I was fighting for my own position at that time. So thankfully, I got one test match against them down in Christchurch that we won. And you know, ever since then, you know, I've spoken to, in particular, Ronan O'Gara and Paul O'Connell and, you know, Brian O'Driscoll at the time through that test. So I just started my thinking around, you know, where I'd like to go and what I'd like to experience, you know, from my rugby career.
They had some legends, Munster, didn't they? Like, honestly, they had some of the greats of the game in that changing room.
They certainly did, and it was a big reason why I went to the club. You know, they were competing in Europe constantly. They had a real work ethic and a culture that I loved, and, you know, similar to what the All Blacks were in terms of, you know, playing for something they love. You know, a lot of the players there were homegrown, playing for, you know, Munster region and Ireland. So to answer your question, going into the changing room for the first time is pretty nerve-wracking, you know, and I think, you know, more so when you come with a bit of a reputation, you know, there's a few things expected of you. You know, it took me back to, you know, my first time I went into the Highlanders. You know, it was like that 18-year-old kid again, you know, everything to prove, and I'm the type of person, I never sort of rely on what I've done, you know, it's what I'm doing and what I will do, you know, for that team. And it was a bit like that coming into the environment, and certainly the Irish sense of humour helped helped me settle in.
Yeah. And a few Guinnesses as well.
Yeah, well, that helped. It was it's almost rite of passage when you go into an Irish team. So wonderful memories, and really thankful that we did travel.
Yeah.
And truth be known, we signed a contract with Munster for 2 years. Mm. Potentially with a view to move on, you know, maybe a bit of time down the Mediterranean.
Yep.
Maybe a couple of years in Japan on the way home.
Around down there, yeah, absolutely. And Japan on the way home too.
And that might have been the big plan, yep. But I guess, you know, we never got past first base. You know, we signed 2 years, and then we stayed for five playing rugby, and then we stayed on for 12 years in total in Ireland playing rugby, but also living and working after that.
I was going to ask you about that. What was, everybody just sees, if they see Doug Howlett, they see you there in your Munster jersey running out doing what you do best. Mm-hmm. But it's a massive move, isn't it? You know, you go over there into a different culture and lifestyle. You know, what was that like? Obviously, it's not going to be as tropical as living in Auckland.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we understood that. You know, we were going for different reasons. We wanted an experience, a rugby experience, and we felt, you know, a few clubs in Europe could offer that, but we chose Munster. Yeah. And we thought, you know, it was my wife and I at the time, and we had my first son Charles, who was 6 months when we left New Zealand. Wow. So look, it wasn't only, you know, my decision. You know, we had a family decision to make, and you know, it was a great process to go through, I think, as a family, and then the following years, I guess, you know, where we were quite close as a family, because we didn't have, you know, any support at the time, you know, abroad.
How was that plane flight with a 6-month-year-old?
Yeah.
Mine was average when I took an 18-month-year-old baby. It's like, oh, my God.
Yeah, look,
that 24 not, hours later.
Yeah, they're not easy, I know. And, you know, as the kids came along, you know, we had a few others after that as well.
And they Irish-born?
Yeah.
So, wow, yeah.
Yeah, so we're really lucky. We're 4 Irish-born children and my son Charles.
Awesome. So, yeah, so what in that period do you think really sticks out for you? You got the opportunity to play for the Barbarians too, didn't you? Whilst you were over there and playing, you know, through that period until you retired in 2013. So you obviously spent more time after playing, but in the playing time, anything that really sort of stands out as...
Yeah, I think, you know, if I look back on my career, I was, you know, probably 2 of my top 5 memories come from, you know, playing in a Munster jersey.
Wow.
And you know, right up there would be playing against the All Blacks as a Munster team in 2008,
yep,
which was the opening of Thomond Park.
Yes.
So this was a team I'd only left, you know, 6 months earlier. You know, so yep, a lot of my mates were in that All Black team, and here I was, actually performing a haka for Munster against the All Blacks. So look, unbelievable opportunity for a start, but then an occasion.
What was that like? I was very fortunate as well, and this is not about me, so I'll quickly move on, but I got to captain the Barbarians against the All Blacks and face the haka. What was it like for you? Obviously, you got to do the haka
as
well.
And you know, I think, you know, performing the haka so many times.
But these guys are literally, like you say, they're your mates 6 months ago.
And that's what it was. And we were fortunate. I had 3 other New Zealanders in my Munster team, Rua Tupoki, Lafimi Mafi and Jeremy Manning.
Yep.
And we got wind of this early on, and we got talking around, gee, how are we going to deal with this? You know, the All Blacks coming to town. And there's a steep history with Munster in particular, where in 1978,
yep,
the Munster team actually tipped the All Blacks. And there's there wasn't a day that went by
that you didn't get reminded.
That I didn't
get relentless, isn't it?
Yeah. And again, in 2008, when we got a chance to play them, we said, look, let's mark the occasion. And we thought we might get the Munster team in its entirety to help us do the haka.
Yeah.
But, you know, they thought the wiser and didn't. One of the comments was, let's not upset them anymore, Doug. You know, you guys do the haka, you represent us. And we did. And what we did there is we haka'd the All Blacks and welcomed them to Thomond Park.
It was amazing.
It was a really, really special memory for me.
And good on you guys. So you're back here now. You've done a little bit of that off-field stuff with the Blues. But what gets you out of bed every day right now?
Yeah,
and apart from 4 kids.
Yeah, well, it's actually 5.
Five, I should say.
Look, you know, it's certainly a busy time. You know, thankful for being away, and there was a decision to be made. You know, once we'd embedded ourselves into Ireland, you know, do we come home? You know, or do we stay in Ireland? We were well set up. The kids were all going to school, learning Irish and doing everything that Irish kids do.
Yeah.
But I think, as you've known, and probably for a lot of you, I guess, you know, what brings us back are our family, you know, school, you know, secondary school time, aging parents, all these things. And we're delighted that we made that decision to come back. And just by chance, you know, we were lucky that we did it when we did. It's the best place in the world to be at the moment with everything going on. So, look, the first year or so was settling back into the country, you know, getting the children settled in schools, developing their network of friends, playing sports, all these great things, and I really cherish the time that I spent, you know, helping them assimilate back into the environment. At the same time, you know, I've gone into a new company called Frozen Fresh, and they're a food manufacturing company. So I've invested in this company and I'm helping them scale their business.
Awesome.
In food manufacturing. So we deal in frozen food, which you can find in supermarkets up and down the country.
Brilliant. Oh, well, look, the word legend gets bandied around quite a lot, but in your case, it's very fitting. And your record and your statistics back that up. 17 years as a professional, you achieved just about everything you could in the game. It's great to see you back in New Zealand, mate, with your family, nice and happy. I really appreciate you coming in and spending some time with us.
Yeah, delighted, mate, and good to shake hands with you once again.
Well, thank you, everybody. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to Doug. Make sure that you tune in for next week's episode, where we'll catch up with another legend of the game in Playmakers.